It is undoubtedly the best spring salmon fishery for fly caught, heading and tailing spring salmon on a lake in Europe. It will not be beaten. Not a chance.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Although the salmon season has only just got underway, some of you may be looking to make plans for your spring fishing, and one fishery that has always caught my eye and that I'm hoping to fish is Carramore Lake, which is in the far corner of Mayo on the Eyres Peninsula. Renowned as a spring salmon lock, it usually features with some of the earliest salmon caught in Ireland each year, but as we find out, Carramore is an awful lot more as well. And for this fishery focus episode, we speak to Brian Hope, member of the local Bangor Eyres Angling Club, to give us the finer points on making the most out of your fishing on the loch. And Tom, before we hear from Brian, he certainly doesn't undersell it as a fishery.
No, good man, Dara. No, he does not. He does not. But well, to be honest with you, Dara, you know, they really have something there. You know, I think we touched on it here last year when we were talking to David McAvoy. And from the Delphi, and remember he was saying about, you know, in Ireland, we have probably some of the best early season salmon fishing and spring salmon fishing to be got anywhere in the world. And, you know, Carramore is part of that. And it's, as you say, it is really well known as an early season salmon fishery. Now, I've actually fished it once, and it's a beautiful spot, Didn't have any luck. But even for me on the west of Ireland here, it's still, you know, it's a good distance away. It's nearly 2 hours from me here from Carramore to go to it. Yeah, it's about an hour and 40, 45 minutes. So it's a good distance away. And like, I'd love to fish it more. Chatting to Brian there, I mean, as you say, he doesn't undersell it, but he definitely tells us about other aspects of it, aside from the spring salmon side of it as well.
Yeah, because in fairness, and this is, I think, is always the danger, isn't it, with fisheries, is that, like, even take the droughts. You know, you think you associate the droughts with January. You know, and the only reason I suppose really why I wanted to get on Carramore is because, again, you'd hear reports kind of early season, early season salmon caught on Carramore. And the likes of these fisheries are actually a lot more, you know, in terms of, like, Brian really talks about the grills run and the potential, you know, how magnificent the fishing is there on it. And the river as well, talks about the river as well and the fishing that's to be had there. So, yeah, for me, it was kind of eye opening in that sense, is that, yeah, okay, look, if you want a good chance of a spring salmon, you know, you obviously kind of have to take into account, you know, best chances for these kind of fisheries, but kind of don't neglect them for later in the year as well. Because actually, in fairness, the droughts is somewhere I've wanted to go kind of later in the year as well, just to try and take advantage of it as well.
Have you ever been to the droughts later in the year?
I was in the droughts, what time of year? I think it might have been, Shane could correct me on this, I think it kind of might have been April or May. I was actually doing, do you know what it was? It was more when you're there in the droughts and it's the freezing cold and, you know, the frost is on the ground. And then when you go there and it's a summer's evening, you know, and the bright nights, and it's just, yeah, it's just a different atmosphere in these places, isn't it? You know, when you're there, you know, just, it's more alluring, I suppose, is what you think. But like, so Brian is a great way of describing it, like, because I was just picturing
it really does,
you know, beside the Atlantic there, the sun setting, you know, you're casting to free rising salmon, taking them in by the bucket load.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, you can tell, you can tell how much what the lake means to him. But very interesting, like, as well, in the difference in conditions where they catch salmon on the lake compared to anything I'd be used to here in Connemara. But back to what we were saying, other aspects of it. The sea trout part of it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. Now, I had heard a couple of friends of mine had gone up and fished it last year. Out in, I think it was around July, August, I'm not 100% sure. But I was chatting to them, and they had fantastic fishing. And part of Carramore that I wasn't really aware of, you know? Yeah.
I think this will give people a good taste of it. Like, and Brian is brilliant in terms of, you know, describing the water, you know, the conditions, and, you know, it's and taking us through the different seasons. So I do hope people, I think, will get a lot out of this and add it to the list. the growing list.
Yeah, I think if you after you've listened to this and you don't have a ken to go fishing Carramore, I don't know what's up with you.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hear from Brian Hope now, and I first asked him to give us an overview of Carramore Lake.
Well, Carramore is in Bangor Eyres, Bangaroris is in northwest Mayo, so it's about 40 kilometres west of Ballina, about 50 kilometres north of Westport. So it's right up there in the top left-hand corner of Mayo. It's a lake of about 9 square kilometres. So it's very small. You know, it's, if you looked at a comparatively versus the likes of Mask, like Mask would be nearly 10 times that size. Or, you know, Corrib, I suppose, would be 20 times that size. It's probably half the size of Sheelan, or, you know, a little bit smaller than Loch Carra. It's not, it's not a big lake. It's a strange shaped lake. It's nearly 6 kilometers long, I suppose, 4 kilometers wide. So in old money, I suppose that's 4 miles by 2.5. But it's got a narrow chute straight up the middle of it. It runs kind of south to north. And at its narrowest point, it's probably about 800 meters wide. So it's a very strange layout of a lake. It's certainly a fantastic salmon fishery. It's known locally as the Lake of the Ravens. You will see the ravens cruising around quite high on it. It's not like there's hundreds of them, but you'll see a few of them cruising around as you fish around it. It's a very barren area. It was actually commercially netted, like a lot of inland waterways up to, I think, 1947. But amazingly, it was the 1980s before they started targeting salmon on it, which just sounds bizarre.
What were they targeting before?
They weren't targeting them up to then, no.
When they were netting it, was it everything? Like, was it sea trout, or was it, you know, when they were doing it commercially? Was it salmon that was then the goal?
They were definitely netting it for the salmon, yeah. They built an ice house into the side of the road down there in the south east corner of it, I suppose you'd say, where they did a nice outcrop of land where they netted from. And yeah, they must have been, I don't know very much about it, but they must have been selling on the salmon. You know, it ceased in 1947. So what exactly happened from 1950 to 1980? I don't know.
What you're saying is, like, sorry, but it really only became a salmon fishery rather line in the 80s, really.
Exactly. Wow. I know from talking to the fishery manager down there, he said to me that a couple of Germans went out in a clapped up boat and they went trolling across the lake and they came in with 3 spring salmon. And then it took off from there.
Was it, like, I'm just interested in the fact that, you know, Connemara, you had a lot of tourists and visiting anglers, you know, going to the different fisheries. But like you're saying, Carrigmore was only just nearly by accident in the 1980s.
Yeah, I don't honestly know, Dara. I really don't.
It's fascinating. It was
well
before my time, you know, but it was known for its sea trout. It always had the sea trout, but I don't think it was actually targeted by anyone as a fishery. I'm sure the river was, but I don't have any other information on that. But I'm sure if people went back through books and things, they'd find the river being mentioned. But it was genuinely only in the 80s it took off. You know, now I know around that time as well, the lake was risen. So they rose the lake by about a foot in sometime in the 80s as well. And that really aided the salmon came in more numbers as a result of that. I don't know how big a factor it was, but I think it was raised to support local water schemes and things like that. Just, you know, like I think I may have mentioned earlier, Bangaroris has about 300 people living in it, but, you know, the area around Uris itself, there'd be 10,000 people around all of Uris now, and I'm not sure how many of them are actually supported by the water. I'm sure the water is only the very immediate area. One of the reasons, I suppose, why the lake is so good for salmon fishing now is it's a very shallow lake. You know, it is an average depth of 2 meters and a maximum depth of just under 4 meters, which is astonishing. You know, I mean, over half the lake is under 2 meters in depth. So you can really get a salmon lion anywhere in the lake, absolutely anywhere. Now, it is best known for its lies, classically, for salmon around the mouths of the rivers. You know, there's the most important river for the salmon spawning would be the Glen Cullen River. There's the most important river for the sea trout spawning would be the Glen Turk River. But you'll also get a great lie of salmon outside the Glen Turk as well. There are the rivers flowing into the lake. They're both up in the kind of northeast corner of the lake. And, you know, that's where a lot of the salmon are. But there's a couple of other very prolific bays on the lake. You have a bay called Paradise Bay. That's well named. A fella from Westport called Paddy Burns, God rest him, who used to fish in it. And he said, if this is paradise, I'm in hell. he couldn't get a fish in it. But you know, it's like there's another super lake there, or super bay called, some of us call it Bog Bay. The locals call it the Black Banks. You know, everybody has their own spots when it comes to salmon. And, you know, like a good gun dog going out into a field, the dog will always tend to run to the corner where he put up the last game bird. And it's kind of the same with us when we're fishing. You go to where you caught your last fish. But it's there's a huge amount of water on the lake. You know, for a lake of only 9 kilometers square in surface area, you could really pick up a salmon anywhere in it, absolutely anywhere.
And was it always spring salmon fish mainly, like that? Always had a good run of spring salmon.
My knowledge of it, it probably was best known as a grids fishery, but for some unknown reason, the grids numbers dropped off a lot around the early 2000s. Not sure why. It still gets a good grids run, but it's not prolific. I mean, it was the classic grids fishery where you could go out and get, you know, three men to a boat. We'd regularly fish three to the boat. And even you could rise a dozen to 15 salmon in a day and catch 7 or 8 grids. Whereas now in high summer, you might pick up 1 or 2 on your day out. And I know that sounds great for most anglers, but it used to be an awful lot better. It's certainly more prolific nowadays as a spring salmon fishery, certainly.
Is that when you get most of the visiting anglers coming to it?
Yeah, I suppose if I was to talk about the season, it starts on January the 1st. But it doesn't get fished really until probably mid-February, you know. I remember the fishery manager down there, Seamus Henry. I remember 1 year on Valentine's Day, I suppose he should have been at home for the dinner. He was out fishing the lake. It's maybe 20 years ago now. He caught a fish on Valentine's Day, a lovely big fish, about 11 or 12 pounds. But generally, we'd go fishing. For me, it'd be from the 1st of March, as soon as the temperatures would rise. You know, if you saw the temperature, if you got a day where the temperature got up to 10 degrees, once you hit the magic double figures, you knew you were in with a great chance, because definitely the fish are running into the lake from January, but they're only starting to move in their numbers in March, coming in March, really. And I'd say the peak of the run is kind of mid-late April. And by May, it's pretty stuffed at that stage. But, you know, we'd be heading down there in March. I always say it's only the mad Mayo men that fish in March would fly. But there'll always be a few lads down there throwing the flies in March. It's hard going. You could be 4 or 5 degrees temperature down there. But I think the nature of the lake being so shallow that as soon as the air temperatures rise at all, the water lifts that half a degree in temperature, and that gets the fish active.
Yeah, the water temperature will correspond a lot quicker. The air temperature, because there's less of it to heat up. Just want to ask you there, Brian, how far is the lake from the sea, and
is it, how much water does it need to get from that bit of stretch of the river?
There lies the beauty of Carrimore. It doesn't need any water.
No.
The Monaghan River is the only river exiting the lake. The Monaghan River joins the Owen Moore River, and we'll have a little chat on the Owen Moore River later on. It joins the Owen Moore River after about a 3 kilometer run. Now, it's a very narrow river, the Monaghan River. You know, in spots, it's only 3-4 meters wide. So you'd be trying to figure out how the heck can the salmon get up there. But it's the amazing thing is, it's only 4.5 meters, the lake, above sea level. So you have a 3 kilometer run down the Monaghan from Carrimore Lake down to the Owen Moore River, and there's a rise of less than 5 meters. So the salmon just shoot through it. I mean, you like, if I was to look at the classic March weather, you know, the wind tends to turn to the east in March, I've noticed, in the last few years. It could be there for a week. It could be there for 4 or 5 weeks even. You could have east winds. And the east winds are very light. There's no rain. There's blue skies. It's normally settled weather. It's everything you'd be thinking are wrong about fishing, especially for the salmonoids. You know, it's tough weather for trout. Mm. But I know the Beltraw boys, the other good salmon lake in Mayo for fly fishing, they would hate the east wind, and they really would hate the bright weather. But in Carrimore, and I say this, and I know it will sound daft to the seasoned fly fishermen, the brightest of sunshine, the lightest of wind, and coming from the east, and you will just have a massive day fishing on Carrimore.
That bucks the trend, doesn't it?
Totally, everything. It really does. I look back over all the years, and sure, look, us fishermen love taking pictures of ourselves with the fish and everything. You look back through all the pictures, the photos that'll be taken, you'd nearly always see a blue sky in the background. Nearly always.
Well, because that's interesting about it as well, because the bit I know about it, I fished it once, and about 20 years ago now, but you said there that it was shallow, and I remember being told that. And if it gets windy, it actually churns up, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. The wind. If you get that light wind from the east, it's great. If you get a strong wind from the west or the south, it will certainly churn up. What happens is, because it's so narrow or so shallow, it's got a sandy bottom, and just it and being shallow, it's got a short pitched wave. You know, if you were out on Mask or on Corrib, you'd be hoping for these big rolling waves, you know. Well, if you're on Carrimore and you're in a rolling wave, you should be on the high stool. It's the only place you should be. There's no point staying on the lake. I think what I do to try and understand the wind is, you know, and I suppose most of us anglers that have half a dozen different weather apps on our phone, and we pick the one that suits us on the day to convince us to go fishing. But there's
you know what that one, you know what that one is called, Brian? It's called anyweatheryouwant.com. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one I use is YRNO, which I find very good. It gives wind speed in meters per second. And I really find it the best. But look, they use all the same information from the boys at sea and the weather stations on land. They just mix it up their own way to come up with their own, I suppose, algorithms and predict their own weather. But it seems to be very accurate on the wind. And like what we found in Carrimore is if you have a wind from the north or the east, it's not really going to do a lot of damage unless it gets up to about 7 and 8 meters per second, which is probably about 25 kilometers an hour, you know, which is only 15, 16 miles an hour. Now, that's force 4, force 5 Beaufort scale, you know, and that's gorgeous on Mask and Corrib. But force 4, force 5, you're gone in Carrimore. It's just, you know, there isn't a tree to be seen. the wind just sweeps down off the hills and will just go straight across the lake, 2 to 4 meters deep. It's just going to churn it up and make it dirty. But you get away with it if it's coming from the east or the north, maybe. But on the Beaufort, you're definitely looking at, you know, force 2 or force 3, which is about 3 to 5 meters per second, which is only, that's only 10 to 14 kilometers an hour, which really is what's that, 6 to 10 miles an hour? That's what you want. You need a lovely light wind.
That is amazing because, like, as you know, there are salmon here in the Corrib, and I do target them occasionally. But for me to target them to fly, I need at least 25 kilometers an hour. You need a big rolling wave that you were talking about, the exact antithesis of what you're saying there, you know. And when we were talking beforehand, before we came on, we were mentioning about how you quite often on Carrimore, in the flat calm almost, or in a tiny little ripple, the salmon will come up and take. And
unbelievably so. I never forget the day I caught my first spring salmon. Now, I started fishing at late 90s, probably 98, 99 for grilts, and there was very good grilts fishing then. But I started targeting spring salmon in maybe 2003, and it took me a couple of years to get one. And I think a lot of it is psychological, and you're just waiting for a bit of luck, and you've risen a few, and you just haven't got one. And then suddenly you get one, and the next day you go out, you get two, and maybe another day you get three. You're saying, Jesus, why wasn't I able to do that all the time? But the day I caught my first spring salmon on it was the bank holiday Monday in 2005. And I was fishing with two great friends of mine, Toby Gibbons and David Lennon. And like we always do, you'd know Toby from the trout scene, Tom.
Yeah, I know Toby well.
Like we always do, we went out and the first drift we went on, sure, Toby got his salmon. He got it out of the way nice and early, nice and handy. And that was in the bay right beside where the boats are, the Black Banks, they call it. And we went up the lake and we spent the day up the lake throwing flies and getting nothing. And we came back down to the Black Banks again. It was about 7:30. And we were drifting along and the wind had gone very light. We were hardly moving. And about 40 yards ahead of us, we saw this big lump of a fresh spring salmon just jumping through the air. They normally don't show on Carrimore. It's one of those lakes where, you know, if you saw a salmon every 3 days or out jumping, you'd say that's all. But the great thing is that you'd see them jumping at your flies very regularly. And
yeah,
like I'll talk a bit more about that in a little while and how exciting that is. But we saw this big salmon jumping and, you know, we drifted down close to him very slowly because, there wasn't much wind. And fair play to the lads, they let me throw the fly out and cover him, and up he came, bang. And I was slow playing him, I suppose. It took a good 20 minutes to get him in. But at the same time, he was 10 pound weight. And he's probably, you know, Carrimore doesn't throw up huge spring salmon. They average 7 pound. They kind of go from a range of 5 up to 9. So a very good fish is above 9. And, you know, you might only catch one fish at 10 pound every 20 fish you get. There might only be one of them would be a double figure. And they rarely go high into double figures. I know going back about 6 years ago, I think Mervyn Corway, he's on the committee down there. He had the opening day fish at the end of March. He was 14 and a half pounds, which is a huge fish for the lake. It really is, you know. But anyway, I got that fish in, and Toby went on the oars because at that stage it was gone flat calm when I landed the fish. And David was still in the boat with us, and we have a technique where you'd row along and you'd throw the flies out and you'd let it turn just outside you. It's a kind of it's like a side cast, and you let the fly just turn directly opposite you, just real quick. And you don't even let line out. You're only just throwing a flick of the line, maybe 5-6 yards, and letting it do a quick turn, flick again. And there was a small little bit of white paper. It looked like we always refer to it as the Yorkshire toffee wrapper, because we went and we picked it up afterwards. But there was a little bit of white paper, maybe an inch square, out on the water ahead of us. up comes the salmon and splashes at the sweet wrapper in the flat can. So Toby rowed the boat over and Dave threw the flies over. Up came the fish, bang, got the fish. We ended up with a fish each for the day on the bank holiday Monday. Amazing story. In last fish in the flat can.
The sweet wrapper fly.
We went, it was so calm. We went back and we picked up the sweet wrapper afterwards. And that's what it looked like. It looked like a little Yorkshire toffee wrapper.
Tell me this, Mark. When is the first fish of the season kind of generally caught? Like, do you get a few lunatics out with the fly this time of year? Or?
Yeah, I qualify. Well, no, you wouldn't. I wouldn't qualify in that category, but I qualify for the first week of March. You'd probably get a couple of lads going out in February, I'd say, Dara. You know, you might get a guy, one or two guys going out in January if you got it very, very mild, but I mean, that's very rare. In general, I would say over the last 10 years, the first spring salmon would be caught between the 10th and 20th of March. As soon as the weather hits double figures, that's what I would say. They could be got before it, but you know, you might only have one or two boats going out at most over a week up to the 10th of March. You know, it's awfully cold. It's bitter down there. You know, it really is. It's wide open. If you get a little bit of rain on your hands and you're throwing flies that time of year, your hands just freeze up and it's hard to get them warm. Now, you can spin from the boat. Trolling is not allowed. Shore fishing is not allowed. It's fly only, but you can spin from the boat up until the end of March. I remember one year down there, I think it was about 2006 maybe. There's a local angler down there, Martin Ruland. He said to me he had 12 fish one March. He caught eight of them on a spinner, and he said it was too easy, so he went fly fishing and he got four more. That March was probably one of the years where the lake had its greatest ever run of fish. I think 2006. I remember. I think Dennis Moss, who has written a couple of books on fly fishing for trout and salmon in Ireland. I think he wrote an article on it. I think in the April of 2006, I think it was about the 17th to the 20th, you know, Good Friday through to Easter Monday. I think in that 4-day stretch, there was over 90 salmon landed on Carrimore Lake.
Jesus
Christ. Bizarre salmon. I mean, it's unbelievable. But look, the lake gets more than 2,000 salmon going into it every year. Every year without fail.
But I was actually going to say that, Brian. Sorry, have you seen the numbers of fish that runs? Has it dropped off in the last few years? Or
I think, as I mentioned earlier, the grilts would have certainly dropped off, being honest, from the early 2000s. But the springers have remained, they've remained steady. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if the conditions are right, and we'd always say the spring season down there, it runs from mid-March to mid-June. It's a three-month season. And we were even down there in... I went down once towards the end of August and once towards the end of September this year. And we rose 11 salmon in the middle of September and we rose 6 or 7 salmon in August. Now, they're stale fish. They're just coming up playing with the fly. But we managed to pick 2 the second day, I think, and 1 the first day. Naturally, you put them back. I put most of the fish back at the best of times down there anyway. But the season, as I said, it'll run from mid-March to mid-June. But by the middle of May, 2 months in, it's pretty stuffed at that stage with spring fishing. I mean, if you got half decent conditions in the middle of May, I'd say you have 2 huge opportunities during the day because salmon are funny. Salmon turn on and turn off when it suits them. You get periods when, you know, without a doubt, Carrimore is the only lake that I've ever fished where if I'm going down a drift and I see a guy 100 yards ahead of me and his rod is bent in a salmon, I am absolutely thrilled. Because I know there's every chance I'm going to hit a fish. Really do. You know, you quite often when you'd be fishing, we all want to be in the fish, but it's definitely the only lake where if you see a guy in a fish, you're thrilled because you know there's a great chance of you picking one up very soon after it. And May would be a prime month for that because there's lots of fish in it. And, you know, it's a long day during May. They come on a couple of times during the day. Definitely they come on for the whole lake. You know, they move on it. Otherwise, you know, you could just pick one up at any time, anywhere. The freshest fish, definitely the 10th to the 20th of April. You know, there's sea lice, loads of them. They're coming in shoals. Like you could genuinely, if you had two or three lads in a boat, you could hit a fish and you could turn around and go back on the drift straight after it, and there'd be another half a dozen fish in the shoal in the exact same spot. You know, they tend to come in little groups, and you could pick a couple of fish out of it very quickly. You know, you could pick two or three in an hour.
No problem. Just going to ask you there, for people listening, tactics. What do you use? Single-handed trout rods? Or do you use, you know, people ask you use double-handed rods, the springers there?
I've seen a few people using the double-handers. Yeah, I suppose it's down to matter of choice, Tom. I'd use the double-hander on the river, but on the lake, bog standard 11-foot Shakespeare Oracle. I'd use an 8-9 because I think the quicker you can get them in, the quicker you can get them back, and it's pretty easy to revive them. A lot of lads would use the Oracle 7-8. I'd use the 8-9. I'd use a very, very basic sinking line or a floating line with a sink tip. Maybe a 10-foot sink tip would be the best, something like that. But we fish very much brown trout style. You know, it's throw it out, retrieve it back, big long dibble. The salmon love the dibble. They really do. I mean, it's amazing to be dibbling a fly, you know, 4 or 5 yards out in front of you. And this big lad, you know, 7, 8, 9 pounds, sea lice, silver shine in the sunshine, in a blue sky with no wind, heads and tails in front of you. It's madness. It really is.
Would you be targeting them by sight as well, Brian?
No. But if you saw a fish jump, we'd always hop on the oars. The way we fish with three in a boat, we'd always have one person on the oars. And you know, we wouldn't go straight down a drift. You'd kind of move over and back, or you'd hug relatively close to the shoreline in spots that you'd have got them in before. Or, you know, if you're not moving them in the shallows, you know, the shallows tend to fish that little bit better later in the day. You know, during the day, you'd go out a bit deeper. But all the time, remember, you're only really in 1 to 3, 3.5 meters of water. But yeah, if you saw a fish hopping, Derry, and you were within rowing range, if you threw the flies over them, you have a huge chance of getting them. But you'd only maybe see one fish moving like that every 2 or 3 days, you'd be out.
And Jerry, just back then, the tactics, patterns, do you use salmon flies? Are they, what size are they? 10s, 8s mainly?
All we'd ever fish is 8s, B175s, the good strong Kamazan hook. Because you certainly don't want to be straightening one of your trout flies in them. You know, we tie the flies specifically for Carramore. All very standard flies, Tom. Green Peters, Bibios, Clarets, a few muddlers. Muddlers can be grey crack on the bob. You know, we would put up doubles or trebles on the tail the odd time if the weather was cold. And you want to get down maybe a foot under the water. But definitely, I'd say 7 or 8 out of 10 fish hit the top. I mean, that's the amazing thing about it. They're so free rising. It's, you know, if you're to be on Beltra, you could be going down 2 or 3 foot to try and get them. But on Carramore, they're going to come up and they're going to hit it. And, you know, the dibble is great fun. I remember one day outside of Glencullen Bay, again with the two lads I fish with, and David Lennon was he rose a salmon 5 times before he got him. And they were all within, you know, there were five simultaneous casts. It wasn't like we'd go back over them. He rose them out far. The fish came a bit closer. The fish went by the bow of the boat. We could see the fish. And the fifth time, he literally turned the rod sideways by the bow of the boat and out the back, up the salmon came and hit the fly on the top. He was only a yard away from the boat.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Tell me this, Brian, in terms of how many boats on the lake, is it all through the club?
All through the club. And there are a couple of the locals down there who'd have their own boats on it. But you can rent a boat out for the day through the fishery manager down there, Seamus Henry. They're all 19-foot boats, mostly anglers' fancies. You'd probably get 10 to a maximum of a dozen fish, a dozen boats on the lake at any day. They wouldn't like any, Seamus wouldn't allow any more than that out, because they tend to congregate a lot of the time up near the river mouths, you know, so you don't want too many boats. It gets a bit cumbersome if you have people too close and things like that. The boats are very well priced. I think they're €30 for the day is the price. A permit to go out in the lake for a day is only €40. So if you had three lads to a boat at €30, a permit each €40, you can get spring salmon fishing for €50 for the day. And it is undoubtedly the best spring salmon fishery for fly caught, as I said, heading and tailing spring salmon on a lake in Europe. It will not be beaten. Not a chance.
I've got the headline now for the episode. tell me this, Brian. Is it, what about guides? Can you hire guides to take you out? Or?
Yeah, I should have mentioned that. There's a couple of local guides down there. A couple of local B&Bs where you could stay in the town itself. You could stay in Evelyn Cosgrove's B&B. It's Hillcrest House. Her husband Richard is the secretary of the club. You could be there with in Heather View with John Cosgrove. John is a fantastic gillie and angler down there. He's a great gillie to take out, great for stories. All his clients are repeat clients. They really like him. To be honest, like any lake, you'd be better off taking a gillie the first few times you go out on it. It's a lake where the wind can pick up very quickly. And if it does, you know, there are a few shallow areas in it and they can be dangerous. You know, you'd be safer off being with a gillie, yeah? You can book any of the gillies through Seamus, the fishery manager, Seamus Henry.
And in terms of the visiting anglers, do they come from far and wide?
Yeah, they come internationally and everywhere, you know. There's people I know lads down there who drive down from Dublin on a Friday and stay there till Sunday evening at dark and go back up home to Dublin and Kildare. And, you know, some of our great club members would have travelled all the way down from the north. Larry McAlinden, God rest him, who passed away last year only. He fought a battle for a long time. He was a great man, great club member, committee member. He would have travelled down to committee meetings from the north down, all the way down. So lots of anglers coming down from all stretches of the country. But sure, why not? It won't be beaten as a fly fishery. It just won't.
And another reason, and I want to bring it in now because we've just touched on it, sea trout. Sometimes it's forgotten, but it's quite a good sea trout fishery as well, Brian, isn't it?
It was a phenomenal sea trout fishery. It got a little bit quiet. I suppose 2010, 2012, around that area. And, you know, the club wondered why. And, you know, the club are very fortunate in that they have a fantastic committee, and they always have had. The committee is made up of anglers and local landowners, many of whom wouldn't even be fishermen. So like, you have all the stakeholders involved, which makes for a great fishery. And, you know, it was observed that the main The main spawning river would have been the Glenturk River. And they had a massive rhododendron problem on that river, and there was no light getting into the river. So what they did was, I think in about 2014, they undertook a three-year plan to engage with a contractor to, you know, to properly cultivate all the rhododendrons and to get the correct permissions in place from all the relevant local authorities and bodies to be able to remove them. And they did remove them. And honest to God, for the last couple of years, the sea trout runs have just gone through the roof again.
And there's no doubt that that work has obviously paid dividends.
Worked brilliantly, because I mean the proof is in the pudding. The sea trout are back. I know. I was talking recently with a friend of mine, and he said they had two sea trout over 2 pounds in the same day last year. Which, you know, when we're used to fishing for sea trout in the west of Ireland, sea trout, you know, you might go out when they're at their peak and they're in and they're fresh and they're giddy and they're in shoals. I mean, to the boat and in any of the good fisheries, you could raise 20, 30 sea trout to the day. And we were rising that every day on Carra Mór, but they weren't the classic 8 to 10, 11 ounce sea trout. You know, these guys were good sea trout. They were from kind of 11 ounces up to pound and a quarter. Maybe one in every half a dozen of them was hitting a pound and a half, and one in every 20 fish or something like that was close to 2 pounds. So we're getting a nice
good stamp. Yeah, that's a good stamp of fish. That is a good stamp of fish for West Coast sea trout.
You'll have a lot of lads that'll tell you, oh, geez, we got a few sea trout that were 3 pound weight, but they're only small grits, you know?
Yeah. Brian, tell us, what about fish in the river?
The river is very good also. I think I mentioned earlier that the lake has a run of probably in excess of 2,000 fish. I'd say the river has a run in excess of 3,000 fish. There's a counter on the river, so it's you know, they'll be able to tell you how well it's doing. The club own a 6 kilometer stretch running about, I suppose, just over 4 kilometers up from the town and 1.5 kilometers maybe down from the town. I think there's over 30 named pools on it, and they're mainly running pools. You know, the river would range from 15 to maybe 25, 30 meters at its widest. Fast water, they're fantastic, really fantastic fly water. You know, the tops of the pools all have a run coming into them from the pool above it, and the bottom of the pool would be a little bit deeper and slower. So what you can find is the salmon run from one pool into the next, and they'd be sitting at the bottom of the pool, or they'd be waiting in the fast water at the top of the pool, or, you know, they might just be running straight through the pool. So you could pick them up anywhere. But, you know, it's, I suppose there's a bit of luck to it, like everything else, and you need to be in the right pool at the right time. And if you are, you would absolutely pick up, you know, you'd pick up 3 salmon and 3 casts, and it could be in any part of the pool. And you could find yourself in a pool and you'd pull 3 salmon, and, you know, the fish are going, there might be a shoal of fish moving through, and the guy in the pool above might hit a few. And, you know, you might get the timing wrong, and you might walk between pools and you might miss them. You know, you get great days, and you get days where you'd be wondering what's going on at all. But it's beautiful water. Really beautiful. And again, the permits are great value. I think the permits are the same as the lake permit. You book them through the fishery manager, and they're about €40. So you get to fish a fantastic salmon river for very good value. And there's 2 shifts on it. You can fish from 6 a.m. to 2 o'clock, or you can fish from 2 o'clock through to 10 o'clock.
You'd say kind of March to June, that's the kind of best time to target.
There are different, there are different strain of fish. The river fish are river fish, and the lake fish are lake fish, and they don't mix themselves up like salmon. They go to where they're from. The the river would start to fish from April, and it would fish right through the season, lads. I mean, there's one period in it, and if you get it right, there's a run of big fish go through it, and you know the river has bigger fish, and you get a run of fish through it. In one flood, they'll come through. Could be any time. It could be the middle of May, the middle of June, or early July. But there will be a run going through it, and there's fish up to 16 pounds in it every year. And you know, that run would average, really would average, you know, a fish of 10 to 12 pounds. You know, you get the normal grilts in summer, probably, you know, late June, July, and August. They're averaging between 4 and 8 pounds. And you'll always have the chance of a bigger fella, double figure fish coming through at that stage as well. You get the spring fish, the classic spring fish from maybe 7 up to 12 pounds in April and May and into the beginning of June. It used to have a phenomenal run of harvest fish, a really, really great run. And that was one of the things Owen Moore, the river was best known for, was that that harvest run. It seemed to die off, to be honest. I think they could have been poached out of it. If you were to go and research it, you'd see a lot of court case activity back in 2011, 12, 13 related to it. It went catch and release then from about 2014 until it's still catch and release. I think it will be opened this year. The club have been very careful, and they were given a number of tags last year and the year before, but I think they maintained it as catch and release themselves. But the numbers really have come up. I mean, if you went back 6 or 7 years ago, it had reduced down to maybe 1,200, 1,500 fish in the year on the river, and now it's back up again over 3,000 by careful management and catch and release, and more presence by fishery officers and locals alike and landowners keeping a close eye on it to make sure it wasn't being poached.
Is you're whetting my appetite something else here, Brian, I tell you.
I'm telling you, Darren, that you know,
I'm not going to release this episode, actually. I think we should just keep this to ourselves.
It'll be heavily edited. It'll be about 2 minutes long.
Lads, that's only the fishing. I mean, the whole of Bangor Uris and the whole of Uris and Belmullet, it's a fantastic place. You know, there's so much to do down there. Like, you have Ballycroy National Park. I think they tried to rebrand it recently as Wild Nathan or something. But, I mean, that national park is just, it's huge. I mean, it goes from Clew Bay on the western side of Mayo, or the southern side of Mayo, goes all the way up to Ballycastle on the northern side. There's a road that goes from Ballycastle into Uris. There's one that comes from Ballycroy. And one of those touches the northern coast of Mayo. One touches the southern coast of Mayo. There's only one other road that goes in. And you know, the entire distance across Mayo from south to north is 50 kilometres. And there's only one road that goes from Castlebar to Bangor Uris to get you through the centre of all that and into Mayo. I mean, you're driving down the car, you want to be watching out to make sure deer doesn't come bombing across the road and take you out of it. You know, you might get to your fishing destination at all. Like, you can drive from Castlebar to Bangor Uris 35 miles straight without meeting a shop on the road of any description. It's fantastic, you know. And there's so much to do down there. You have the Bangor Trail. It's a big long walk across the Nathan Begg Mountains. You know, I think it's about 40 kilometer trek. It dates back to the Iron Age. You have the Cage of Fields up near Ballycastle, which have 5,000 year old farmlands were found underneath the Blanket Bog up there. I mean, there was a local man, digging his turf in the 1930s, and he came across these rocks 10 feet down in the bog, and they investigated it at the time and thought nothing of it. And sure, like all good stories go, 40 years later in the 1970s, his son became an archaeologist. And by the mid-1990s, the OPW had built a world-renowned visitor centre up there. And it's, you know, it's now known as one of the best examples of a blanket bog and, you know, settlement and farming lands going back, as I said, 5,000 years. You have the cycling, loads of walkways down there, Carrotaig Loop Walk. You have Cairn Golf Links.
But you still don't have Sam.
Yeah, now listen.
Ooh!
We haven't time. That's coming from the Dubs. We haven't time for Sam. We're too busy fishing. Look, you've all the sea fishing down there. You have the best of beaches. You could go visit in the Inishkea Islands, which was a whaling station in the 1930s. I could go on and on and on. There's so much to do down there. But yeah, we still don't have Sam, you're right.
Last question for you, Brian. It's been brilliant listening to it. Like I said, whetted my appetite. I don't know that part of the country at all. I'm definitely going to take a road trip down there in the next few months. Tell us, come here, you've obviously been fishing a long time. What's been your most memorable fish on the fly? And not necessarily from Carrimore.
It's hard to beat the first spring salmon I caught, but to be honest, I think it's a pound and three quarter trout on Loch Ness.
Really?
Back in the last Saturday of March in 1997. You know, when I was younger, I was brought up fishing the local river in Westport, and you know, bouncing worms down the river and learning the feel of the fish and where the holes were that you'd have a trout sitting and things like that. And I think I went from there then into spinning for salmon and, you know, flying seas and tobies and things like that. And it was always a great, when you got that hit under the water, it was mighty. I gave up fishing then for a while because I played too much football and went off to college and lots of stuff like that. And I think in my mid-20s, I was up on the shore of Loch Ness one day and I saw a friend of mine out in a boat, and he called me out and we went out and he had a spare rod with him and he asked me, do I want to throw a few casts? And we were drifting down by Mam Trasnell. I had been spinning on the shore there and I was fishing a golden olive at the time. It wasn't even the classic olive, golden olive bumble that you'd fish now. It was just the golden olive with the bronze mallard wing. And Jesus, up head and tailed a brown trout to me at a pound and three quarters. And I think from that day on, I was just a fly fisherman. It just happened there and then. And just the whole thrill of seeing a fish coming up out of the water, that did it for me. And I hadn't fly fished till then. You know, I was in my mid-20s at that stage. And, you know, it was then I found the Carrimore grilts. And after that, you know, I met Tom through a lot of competition scenes, fishing right. Connacht Cup,
yeah.
Different things like that. And that's where we got to know each other. And I was Jesus, the bank holiday Monday then down in Carrimore in 2005, we hit that spring salmon. And I can't keep myself off the lake down there now. It's all about watching that fish coming up over the flies for me, Dara. But a pound and three quarter trout did it.
And after that, you were lost. You were gone.
Yeah.
That was it, yeah. That was it.
If anybody wants to book tickets, boat guiding, what's the website they should go for the club?
Go to bangerurisangling.com and you'll get a phone number there for the fishery manager. Great guy, Seamus Henry. He's been looking after the job there as fishery manager for as long as I've been down there. And he'll certainly look after you. Look, there's peak times. It can be hard to get on it. But give him a call. He'd find a slot for you. If either of the two of you are ever interested in going down that way, just, you know, give me a buzz. I'd love to bring you out.
I'm putting it on my list now.
Just the last point, lads. Like myself and the two lads I fish with, Dave and Toby, you know, we went off to South Uist chasing sea trout in 2006 and had great fishing. And we went to Canada in 2008. Now, wasn't as good as it says on the tin. You're fishing on a lot of reds and things like that in Canada. We didn't get the best of fishing, but you know, we're all the time talking about going to Tierra del Fuego and, you know, the Rio Grande and things like that, but it's big money. And why would you want to go anywhere when you have Bangarus? That's what we always end up saying. So I'll leave it there.
We said it, you know, when we were talking to David McAvoy last year, when he said, you know, you got to remember what's available in the west of Ireland the first couple of the months a year surpasses anything else at that time of the year anywhere else in the world.
I agree, yeah. Yeah.
Brian Hope, thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks a million, Brian. Fair play to you.
Thanks a million.
A thanks to Brian Hope for joining us on the show. And you can also visit BangarUsAngling.com for more information. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.